بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the most merciful, the most compassionate.
يا أيها الناس اتقوا ربكم الذي خلقكم من نفس واحدة وخلق منها زوجها وَخَلَقَ مِنْهَا زَوْجَهَا وَبَثَّ مِنْهُمَا رِجَالًا كَثِيرًا وَنِسَاءً وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ الَّذِي تَسَاءَلُونَ بِهِ وَالْأَرْحَامَ إِنَّ اللَّهَ كَانَ عَلَيْكُمْ رَقِيبًا.
O men, fear your Lord who created you from a single being, and out of it created its mate, and out of the two spread many men and women. Fear Allah in whose name you plead for rights, and heed the ties of kinship. Surely Allah is ever watchful over you, and out of the two spread many men and women. What are the mutual rights of human beings? What are the principles on which a sound and stable family life can be established are questions that are discussed a little further on in this surah. As an appropriate introduction to the subject, the surah opens by exhorting the believers to fear God and to avoid courting His displeasure, and by urging them to recognize that all human beings have sprung from the same root, and that all of them are, therefore, of one another's flesh and blood. The expression, "who created you from a single being," nafs, indicates that the creation of the human species began with the creation of one individual. At another place, the Quran specifies that the one person from whom the human race spread in the world was Adam. For Adam being the progenitor of mankind, see Towards Understanding the Quran, Surah 2, verses 31, and Surah Al-A'raf, 7:11. The details how out of that being its mate was created are not known to us. The explanation which is generally given by the commentators of the Quran, and which is also found in the Bible, is that Eve was created out of a rib of Adam. The Talmud is even more detailed in it, that it states that Eve was created out of Adam's 13th rib on the left side. The Quran, however, is silent on the matter, and the tradition which is adduced in support of this statement does not mean what is often thought to be. It is thus better that we leave the matter in the same state of ambiguity in which it was left by God, rather than waste our time trying to determine in detail the actual process of the creation of man's mate.
وَآتُوا الْيَتَامَى أَمْوَالَهُمْ وَلَا تَتَبَدَّلُوا الْخَبِيثَ بِالطَّيِّبِ وَلَا تَأْكُلُوا أَمْوَالَهُمْ إِلَى أَمْوَالِكُمْ إِنَّهُ كَانَ حُوبًا كَبِيرًا.
Give orphans their property, and do not exchange the bad for the good. And do not eat up their property by mixing it with your own. This surely is a mighty sin. Give orphans their property. God directs the guardians of the orphans to spend out the latter's property while they are still minors, and to restore it to them when they attain majority. And do not exchange the bad for the good. The order not to exchange the bad for the good has several meanings. On the one hand, it means that one should not replace honest by dishonest living. At the same time, it also means that one should not exchange one's own property, which is of little value, for the more valuable property of the orphans.
وَإِنْ خِفْتُمْ أَلَّا تُقْسِطُوا فِي الْيَتَامَى فَانْكِحُوا مَا طَابَ لَكُمْ مِنَ النِّسَاءِ فَانْكِحُوا مَا طَابَ لَكُمْ مِنَ النِّسَاءِ مَثْنَى وَثُلَاثَ وَرُبَاعَ فَإِنْ خِفْتُمْ أَلَّا تَعْدِلُوا فَوَاحِدَةً أَوْ مَا مَلَكَتْ أَيْمَانُكُمْ ذَلِكَ أَدْنَى أَلَّا تَعُولُوا.
If you fear that you might not treat the orphans justly, then marry the women that seem good to you, two or three or four. If you fear that you will not be able to treat them justly, then marry only one. Or marry from among those whom your right hands possess. This will make it more likely that you will avoid injustice. Then marry the women that seem good to you, two or three or four. Commentators have explained this in the following ways. 1. There is the view of Aisha, who says that men tended to marry orphan girls who were under their guardianship out of consideration for either their property, beauty, or because they thought they would be able to treat them according to their whims, as they had no one to protect them. After marriage, such men sometimes committed excesses against these girls. It is in this context that the Muslims are told that if they fear they will not be able to do justice to the orphan girls, then they should marry other girls whom they like. This interpretation seems to be supported by verse 127 of this surah. 2. The second view is that of Ibn Abbas and his disciple Ikrimah, who expressed the opinion that in the Jahiliyyah period, there was no limit on the number of wives a man could take. The result was that a man sometimes married as many as 10 women, and when expenses increased because of a large family, he encroached on the rights either of his orphan nephews or other relatives. It was in this context that God fixed the limit of 4 wives and instructed the Muslims that they may marry up to 4 wives, providing they possess the capacity to treat them equitably. 3. Sa'id bin Jubair Qatada and some other commentators say that while the Arabs of the Jahiliyyah period did not approve of subjecting orphans to wrong, they had no concept of justice and equity with regard to women. They married as many women as they wanted and then subjected them to injustice and oppression. It is in this context that people are told if they fear perpetrating wrongs on orphans, they ought to be equally worried about perpetrating them on women. In the first place, they should never marry more than 4, and of those 4, they should marry only as many as they can treat fairly. Each of the 3 interpretations is plausible, and all 3 may possibly be correct. Moreover, the verse could also mean that if a person does not find himself able to treat orphans in a fair manner, then he might as well marry the women who are looking after those orphans.
If you fear that you will not be able to treat them justly, then marry only one.
Muslim jurists are agreed that according to this verse, the maximum number of wives has been fixed at 4. This conclusion is also supported by traditions. It is reported that when Ghilan, the chief of Taif, embraced Islam, he had 9 wives. The Prophet, peace be upon him, ordered him to keep only 4 wives and divorce the rest. Another person, Nawfal bin Ma'awiyah, had 5 wives. The Prophet, peace be upon him, ordered him to divorce one of them. For the relevant traditions, see the comments of Ibn Kathir and Qurtubi on this verse. This verse stipulates that marrying more wives than one is permissible on the condition that one treats his wives equitably. A person who avails himself of this permission granted by God to have a plurality of wives and disregards the condition laid down by God to treat them equitably has not acted in good faith with God. In case there are complaints from wives that they are not being treated equitably, the Islamic State has the right to intervene and redress such grievances. Some people who have been overwhelmed and overawed by the Christianized outlook of Westerners have tried to prove that the real aim of the Quran was to put an end to polygamy, which, in their opinion, is intrinsically evil. Since it was widely practiced at that time, however, Islam confined itself to placing restrictions on it. Such arguments only show the mental slavery to which these people have succumbed. That polygamy is an evil per se is an unacceptable proposition, for under certain conditions it becomes a moral and social necessity. If polygamy is totally prohibited, men who cannot remain satisfied with only one wife will look outside the bounds of matrimonial life and create sexual anarchy and corruption. This is likely to cause much greater harm than polygamy to the moral and social order. For this reason, the Quran has allowed those who feel the need for it to resort to polygamy. Those who consider it an evil in itself may certainly denounce it in disregard of the Quran and may even argue for its abolition. But they have no right to attribute such a view to the Quran, for it has expressed its permission of polygamy in quite categorical terms. Indeed, there is not the slightest hint in the Quran that could justify the conclusion that it advocates abolition of polygamy.
Or marry from among those whom your right hands possess.
This expression denotes slave girls, for instance, female captives of war who are distributed by the state among individuals. The purpose of this verse is to tell men that if their financial circumstances do not permit them to support a free woman as their wife, then they may marry a slave girl. See verse 25 below. If they consider it necessary to have more than one wife, and it would be difficult for them to treat their free wives equitably, they may resort to slave girls, for here the burden of obligations is lighter by comparison. For further injunctions regarding slave girls, see N44 below.
وَآتُوا النِّسَاءَ صَدُقَاتِهِنَّ نِحْلَةً فَإِنْ طِبْنَ لَكُمْ عَنْ شَيْءٍ مِّنْهُ نَفْسًا فَكُلُوهُ هَنِيئًا مَرِيئًا.
Give women their bridal due in good cheer, considering it a duty. But if they willingly remit any part of it, consume it with good pleasure. But if they willingly remit any part of it, consume it with good pleasure.
In the opinion of Umar and Shuraih, if a woman gives up either the whole or a part of the bridal due, mehr, in favor of her husband and later reclaims it from him, then he is bound to pay it. The claim on the woman's part would be tantamount to her unwillingness to remit either the whole or a part of the bridal due.
ولا تؤتوا السفهاء أموالكم التي جعل الله لكم قياما وارزقوهم فيها واكسوهم وقولوا لهم قولا معروفا.
Do not entrust your properties, which Allah has made a means of support for you, to the weak of understanding, but maintain and clothe them out of it, and say to them a kind word of admonition.
This verse covers a very wide spectrum of meaning. It emphasizes to the community of believers that wealth is one of the main supports of human life. Should not be left, therefore, at the mercy of those who are incompetent to handle it properly. By misusing wealth, such people might destroy the basis of social and economic life and wreck the moral foundations of human society. The right to private property is not so absolute. If a person is incapable of exercising this right properly, and if he might cause grave social harm by wanton expenditure, then his right may be forfeited. The necessities of such a person's life should always be provided for. But so far as the exercise of his proprietary rights is concerned, due restrictions should be placed on it in order that the owner is restrained from spending his resources in brazen disregard of the dictates of morality, collective welfare, and economic interests of the community. According to the directive embodied in the verse, anyone who entrusts his property to someone else's care should satisfy himself that the latter is capable of making good use of it. At a higher level, it is incumbent upon an Islamic state to take over the management of the properties of those who either lack totally the capacity for good management or cause social damage by misuse. In such cases, the state is responsible for providing these people with their livelihood.
وَابْتَلُوا الْيَتَامَى حَتَّى إِذَا بَلَغُوا النِّكَاحَ فَإِنْ آنَسْتُم مِّنْهُمْ رُشْدًا فَادْفَعُوا إِلَيْهِمْ أَمْوَالَهُمْ وَلَا تَأْكُلُوهَا إِسْرَافًا وَبِدَارًا أَن يَكْبَرُوا. وَمَنْ كَانَ غَنِيًّا فَلْيَسْتَعْفِفْ وَمَنْ كَانَ فَقِيرًا فَلْيَأْكُلْ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. الصُّفُوفِ فَإِذَا دَفَعْتُمْ إِلَيْهِمْ أَمْوَالَهُمْ فَأَشْهِدُوا عَلَيْهِمْ وَكَفَى بِاللَّهِ حَسِيبًا.
Test the orphans until they reach the age of marriage, and then if you find them mature of mind, hand over to them their property, and do not eat it up by either spending extravagantly or in haste, fearing that they would grow up and claim it. If the guardian of the orphan is rich, let him abstain entirely from his ward's property. And if he is poor, let him partake of it in a fair measure. When you hand over their property to them, let there be witnesses on their behalf. Allah is sufficient to take account of your deeds. Test the orphans until they reach the age of marriage. When such people approach their majority, their mental development should be watched so as to determine to what extent they have become capable of managing their own affairs. Hand over to them their property. Two conditions have been laid down for handing over the charge of their properties to such people. The first of these is the attainment of puberty, and the second is that of mental maturity. For instance, the capacity to manage their affairs in a sound and appropriate manner. There is full agreement among Muslim jurists with regard to the first condition. As for the second condition, Abu Hanifa is of the opinion that if an orphan does not attain mental maturity after he has attained puberty, the guardian of the orphan should wait for a maximum of 7 years, after which he should hand over the property to its owner regardless of whether he has attained maturity or not. According to Abu Yusuf, Muhammad bin al-Hassan, and Shafi, maturity is an indispensable precondition for the handing over of property. If one were to apply the doctrine of the latter jurists, it would probably be more appropriate to refer particular cases to a judge under Islamic law. If the judge is convinced that the person concerned lacks maturity, he should make adequate arrangements for the supervision of that person's financial affairs. And if he is poor, let him partake of it in a fair measure. The guardian is entitled to remuneration for his service. The amount of this remuneration should be such as is deemed to be fair by neutral and reasonable people. Moreover, the guardian is instructed that he should take a fixed and known amount by way of remuneration, that he should take it openly rather than secretly, that he should keep an account of it.
للرجال نصيب مما ترك الوالدان والأقربون وللنساء نصيب مما ترك الوالدان والأقربون وللنساء نصيب مما ترك الوالدان والأقربون مما قل منه أو كثر نصيبا مفروضا.
Just as there is a share for men in what their parents and kinsfolk leave behind, so there is a share for women in what their parents and kinsfolk leave behind, be it little or much, a share ordained by Allah. Be it little or much. This verse embodies five legal injunctions. First, that women as well as men are entitled to inheritance. Second, that inheritance, however meager it might be, should be distributed, even if the deceased has left a small piece of cloth and he has 10 heirs, that piece of cloth should be distributed among them all. This does not exclude, however, the permissibility of one heir purchasing the shares of other heirs with their consent. Third, this verse indicates that the law of inheritance is applicable to all kinds of property, movable and immovable, agricultural, industrial, and so on. Fourth, it shows that the right of inheritance comes into force as soon as a person dies leaving property. Fifth, it implies the rule that immediate blood relatives exclude those that are further removed.
وَإِذَا حَضَرَ الْقِسْمَةَ أُولُو الْقُرْبَى وَالْيَتَامَى وَالْمَسَاكِينُ فَارْزُقُوهُمْ مِنْهُ وَقُولُوا لَهُمْ قَوْلًا مَعْرُوفًا.
And if other near of kin orphans and needy are present at the time of division of inheritance, give them something of it and speak to them kindly. Give them something of it and speak to them kindly.
This directive is addressed to the heirs of the deceased. They are told not to be niggardly towards their relatives, whether they be close or distant, nor should they be niggardly towards either poor and needy members of the family or towards orphans who are present when the inheritance is distributed. Although they are not legally entitled to any share, it is seemly for people to act magnanimously and give them something out of their inheritance, and especially to desist from making hurtful remarks.
وليخشى الذين لو تركوا من خلفهم ذرية ضعافا خافوا عليهم فليتقوا الله وليقولوا قولا سديدا.
And let them fear those who, if they would themselves leave behind helpless offspring, they would surely have been fearful on their account. Let them then fear Allah and make the right statement.
إِنَّ الَّذِينَ يَأْكُلُونَ أَمْوَالَ الْيَتَامَى ظُلْمًا إِنَّمَا يَأْكُلُونَ فِي بُطُونِهِمْ نَارًا إِنَّمَا يَأْكُلُونَ فِي بُطُونِهِمْ نَارًا وَسَيَصْلَوْنَ سَعِيرًا.
Behold, those who wrongfully devour the properties of orphans only fill their bellies with fire. Soon they will be burning in the blazing flame. Soon they will be burning in the blazing flame. It is reported in a tradition that after the Battle of Uhud, the wife of Sa'd bin Rabi brought her two daughters to the Prophet, peace be upon him, and said, O Messenger of God, these are the daughters of Sa'd, who was with you in the Battle of Uhud, where he was martyred. These girls' uncles have seized the whole property and left nothing for them. Who will now marry these girls? It was after this incident that these verses were revealed.